This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Let me just run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract's fine print? Or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
We're all looking for ways to save, especially on medical bills. But where do you start? Unless you're a medical bill expert, finding savings can seem impossible. Well, HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance and flags errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. So start saving with knowing where to look. Visit HealthLock.com today before you see another healthcare provider. That's HealthLock.com. The
unimaginable. This episode features a professional boxer ranked number 8 in the world, Giovanni Cabrera. Tune in for a glimpse through the lens of an undefeated fighter before his largest professional fight. And stick around for the second half of this episode to hear what loss feels like for the first time. We explore questions like, what are the benefits of losing? What's the purpose of ego? Why should we keep fighting? What happens when we spread ourselves too thin? I'm your host, Jimmy Brown. You're listening to The Unimaginable.
My name is Giovanni Cabrera. Now known as El Cabrón, I'm 21-0, ranked number 8 in the world by the IBF. I was born in Seattle, Washington. My father's name is Luis Cabrera. My mother's name is Angela Cabrera. I was born in Seattle, and as soon as I was born, I moved to Mexico. My father kind of bounced around from jobs all the time. So from age 1 to 10, we would move back from Seattle to Mexico, Seattle to Mexico, Seattle to Mexico. So, you know, just that upbringing in itself, you know, growing up in León, Guanajuato, that's where my father was born, León, Guanajuato. They always call me güero or gringo, you know what I mean? So there was always something to prove. There was, from the very beginning, you know, my brother was actually crazier when we were kids. You know, he would take on two kids at once sometimes, but growing up in that school, I went to a school. It was right across the street from my grandmother's house called La Piojito, which means the flea, because it was like kind of a ghetto, dirty school or whatever. But my dad had gone to that same elementary school and middle school when he was a kid. And back then, it was one of the most prestigious schools in León. When I went there, it was one of the most ghetto schools in León. So it was like the Hunger Games, man. Like, we would literally go out into the hallway and fight the third graders, and like nobody could do shit about it. Like, the teachers would try to get us to calm down. We would turn on the teacher and we'd make the teacher cry, you know, that kind of thing. So, like, we grew up, like, you know, with that street kid mentality. I would stay out all day in the street and come home. And, you know, there's always the older kids there. And for me, again, me and my brother were the gringos. We were the Americans. So, like, you know, we were all, I was like, come on, man, like, show us how Mexican you are, you know. So that turned into fights, too. So I always had that mentality growing up. Right around 9 or 10, my parents got divorced in Seattle, you know. So then my mom kind of did the old kind of tricked, said, hey, we're going on vacation. She packed up all of our stuff. And instead of going on vacation, we went to Chicago and we went on the South Side, Canaryville, you know, and that was a fucking culture shock, man, because like from going to Mexico, like all my family had grown up in that neighborhood. Now it's kind of, you know, kind of a dangerous neighborhood. Mexico's getting a little bit worse, but we were still kind of, how do you say, taken care of. Everybody knew my father. Everybody knew my grandfather. My grandfather was a shoemaker, you know, and my father was one of the few guys from that neighborhood to go to the United States. So we were well respected and we fought our way in that neighborhood to be respected. So Mexico, you know, everyone still loved us in that neighborhood because we had a history, our family there. In Seattle, it was very progressive leftist thinking over there, you know, very kind of forward with race and I go to the South Side of Chicago. I didn't realize that I wasn't Mexican and I didn't realize that I wasn't, you know, white either. I'm Mexican and Italian, you know. So they're like, yo, the Mexicans treated me like a white boy. The white boys treated me like a Mexicans. And like, funny enough, the guys who me and my brother got along with were all my black friends on the South Side, you know. We joined a football team and we were kind of growing up there. But yeah, man, it was just moving around. I was always a new kid in school. For me, relationships were fleeting, so I kind of stopped giving a shit about trying to fit in, you know. That was really the change in my mentality, which led me to become a fighter because, you know, Ezra, my brother, knew how to play the game, and he was a little bit smarter. He didn't want to fucking stir anybody up. I was like, yo, fuck these dudes. Like, I'm not going to just go along with whatever they're saying just because they're saying. Now, this didn't really work out in my favor because I was a short kid. I was like, maybe like 90 pounds and like 4'6" or 4'7", you know? But I definitely always had that mentality. It's like, dude, no, I'm not just going to fucking sit here and agree with you just because what? Because I want to fit in? Probably won't see you next year. I just started to just stick up for myself in that way. But while I was in Chicago on the South Side, these kids would fuck with me every day, you know, because everybody that's hurt, especially in these neighborhoods and like, you know, with lower incomes, you know, everybody's hurting. You know, everybody grows up with trauma and people want to inflict their pain on you, you know. So when you see someone like me, who was kind of a more of a pure kid, even though that I kind of was always fighting and stuff, I still had very good intentions and these kids were damaged. You know, they were all in gangs. So I would go to the bathroom. Sometimes it'd be two or three kids and I would have to fucking fight them. Like, this is no big deal. The school was a fucking nightmare on the South Side. I went to this school called Holden. And eventually, man, I got so sick and tired of these kids fucking with me. I finally joined them. And, you know, they bullied me into joining a gang, man. I don't want to name which one. Hopefully it doesn't still... those guys might be dead probably, you know? But yeah, they bullied me one day after school. I was in behind the school and like four kids jumped me in. And like I had to fight them for like 3 minutes. One round versus like four kids, you know? Just... And at the end of it, I was just against the wall and boom, 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 getting hit everywhere. I'm trying to block. I'm trying to swing. But no, they kicked my ass pretty good. Maybe like a couple of days later, I was at a family barbecue because my mom had a boyfriend at the time. So we went to their like family barbecue or whatever. And I take off my shirt and I'm just fucking black everywhere with bruises. They're like, what happened? You know what happened? I'm like, basketball. Yeah, fucking basketball. You know, these kids play rough. Finally, my dad comes back in the picture and he convinces, we hadn't seen my family for a long time in Mexico. So he says, okay, we're going to go visit our family in Mexico. We go to visit our family in Mexico and I get a call from my mom and they're all worried. And they're like, well, what's going on? What's going on? There was this neighbor kid that I used to hang out with sometimes, Stevens, white ginger kid, kind of an asshole. Nobody really liked this guy. And I would hang out with him sometimes. And apparently this kid was at the park where all the, you know, gang members hung out. And they wanted to shoot him and they wanted to shoot me because apparently we were making fun of a mentally challenged girl whose uncle was like one of the leaders of the gang. Man, I was so fucking scared. I thought someone was trying to kill me in sixth grade. You know what I mean? You know what kind of terror that was? Because I didn't know that they knew, or maybe they didn't know, but I was in the gang, you know? So I'm like, this is for sure a death sentence. I don't know what it was, but like that kind of fear when you're little was a nightmare. I was praying so hard, man. I was like, please, God, just let me escape this. I'll never do anything bad again, blah, blah, blah. So finally, we come back, and my dad says he's moving to Chicago. So that summer, well, I still had like a month and a half left of summer. I'm hiding in my house. I did not see even a brink, a minute of daylight. And finally, my dad comes, and I thank my father for this, but I really think he saved my life, man, because it was going bad. You know, I was not going to do well, because even with these kids, like, I was still trying to be the best at whatever, you know, even if I was in, I was going to be the best of them too. So I started doing bad shit with them, you know, cars would drive by, we would throw bricks at them, boom, you know. I started smoking weed in sixth grade, you know. Smoking weed in sixth grade, you know, fucks with your head. You don't know. It's like, whoa, what is this? So, yeah, man, that's really how it started. Now, when my father moved back, I moved to the west suburbs, like junior high, right? And now I'm all ghetto. I'm ghetto now. And these kids are looking at me. I'm like 4'7", you know. Kind of have like this Beatles haircut going on, weird, awkward stage, but I'm dressed in like an inner city kid. They're like, this guy's a poser. Little they know, they don't know what the fuck I just went through, you know? And yeah, so I wasn't really, I was always kind of like, I felt like I was always kind of an outcast, you know? Never really accepted because of these different backgrounds. I mean, no one really understood where I came from and, you know, why I was the way that I was. So I just started to reject the culture. The people who stood out to me were always the people in the counterculture. And, you know, the different rebels of society, the authors, you know. So when I started playing football, I had been playing American football. And for being a small guy, American football, I played with everybody. But then I stopped growing and these guys just got huge, you know. And I got sick and tired of this shit. So I was like, you know what? I'm tired of this. I'm tired of studying. I was a horrible student. Just because I just didn't try, it didn't interest me. I was like, none of this is serving me. Like, I see what's going on here. I'm following everyone's path and it's not like fucking making me any happier. I'm not going to just sit here and do what everyone else does. And I thought like, okay, what better way? My complete rejection of culture and my escape from this kind of so-called like game or the matrix or whatever you want to call it, I take it into my own hands, literally. I was at a party in 2009. A friend's party, one of the guys on the wrestling team, my brother was a football player and a wrestler, and we were at this house, and it was 2009, I think, and Manny Pacquiao was fighting Miguel Cotto. Great fight, great fight. And I started to learn about Manny Pacquiao and like the buildup to the fight, and they're like, wow, this guy was small like me, you know? He had conquered like 3 or 5 or 6 weight classes at the time. And everyone's talking about this guy, all eyes on Manny Pacquiao and the respect. I could feel it off everybody. And I was like, man, if he can do it, I can do it. I want to be like him. It was close to like Christmas time. And I bought 2 pairs of gloves for me and my brother. At that time, well, funny enough, what got me into boxing was that Manny Pacquiao fight. But the UFC started becoming really popular. So guys like Rampage, you know, Machida, Anderson Silva, all those guys. Big personalities in the UFC, it was hot, you know? So we started putting the gloves on with our friends. And these guys, some of these guys were pussies, my friend. You know, I've been through enough to know I could take a hit. So like we would put on the gloves with these big football players, these big wrestlers, man, and they get hit 1, 2, 10, stop. If I got hit once or twice, I would hit 2 or 3, 4 times more back. And I knew that I had something different, you know. I knew that sometimes I would beat these guys. These guys had beat me by like 50, 80 pounds sometimes, you know. And I would surprise the shit out of them and I had more fire than them and I knew it. Whatever they had physically, they didn't have spiritually inside of them, you know. Yeah, and then that sent me down a rabbit hole. I started to form a stronger identity, you know. And I started to look at all the past boxers, the great past boxers, Muhammad Ali. I was like, whoa. Once I heard of Muhammad Ali and there was so much magic surrounding his history and like, you know, just his name and the aura and the energy that all that brings. It was just something like from a movie. I don't know who it was. I think it was like Lennox Lewis or Bernard Hopkins or one of those guys said that boxing is magic. You know, it gives power to the weak and I don't know, man, but it truly is. It truly is magic. So I started to form this identity. I was like, I was attracted to the greatness of it, you know, to the big stage, to the history. And I just became a student of the game. I started boxing at this one gym in the suburbs and I trained really hard. I got on the boxing team within like a week and a half. And then I sparred the coach's son, and I felt I beat him. You know, I was horrible, very sloppy, but I knew that I had that fire still. I beat him, and then everyone started resenting me at that gym. I was like, what the hell? I was like, I thought they would be proud. You know, wow, this kid's got talent. But really, they were just trying to be like, oh, no, this kid thinks he's like good or something. And that really broke my heart, you know, because I was like, here's finally something that I'm doing well. And these guys are kind of trying to shun me down. I was like, what the fuck do these guys know in the suburbs? I was like, if I'm going to learn boxing, I need to go back to the hood. So I went to this gym on the southwest side in Summit, Illinois, where all the factories are. It smells kind of bad over there, you know. I started training there, you know. There was no glitz or glam. It was at a park in a garage. There we had one heavy bag, one speed bag, bunch of shitty jump ropes, bunch of stinky ass gloves, and I loved it. I trained my ass off for a few months. Finally, I had my first amateur fight, and boom, 10-second knockout, man. 10-second knockout. Now, if anybody can find, there's only one faster amateur knockout in the history of boxing, and that's Mike Tyson's 8-second knockout. I have mine on video, and if anybody could find one that's faster, please show me. So once I knocked that kid down, I just hit him first 10 seconds. Came up, jab, straight left hand to the chin, he goes down. I could not believe it that I was capable of doing something like that. So that started my boxing career. I won like 30 straight fights. I think I lost one in the Golden Gloves. And the next year I came back and I became Golden Gloves champion of Chicago. And that was like, I had finished high school by then. I had just finished high school and I become Golden Gloves champion of Chicago. And I don't know. I feel like life was moving. Everything was moving. And people were making decisions of what, you know, schools they wanted to go to and this and that. And I just knew that, like, I didn't think that I could afford college or something like that. But it seems like I was just being passive in a way that was sneaky because I knew there was one thing that I wanted to do and it was box, you know? So when the time came, I moved to Los Angeles. When I was 19, after I won the Golden Gloves, I moved to LA and I trained at Wildcard for 1 year. I trained at Wildcard for 1 year. And I thought I was going to come to LA and I was going to, wow, everybody. And I was going to conquer the world, you know. And I really found out how hard it was to make it on your own in a new city at 19, you know, fighting at the best gym in the world in the wolf pit. As the amateurs, I did really good, but I was sparring pros now and I was getting my ass kicked. All right. After 1 year, I was like, fuck, I'm not just going to stay here and keep doing this. This is like a waste of time. I need more experience. Like, these guys are just going to beat on me. So I decided to go. Instead of going back home, I felt like I couldn't go back home yet. I didn't want to fail, you know. I was like, nah, I'm not ready to go home yet. So instead, I went to Mexico. I went to León, Guanajuato, where my father was from. And I knew there was a gym right by there that I had visited before. The gym, Rocky Gym. And Monica Gonzalez is this woman who's the owner of the gym. She had been boxing for a long time. And her son was there, too. And he was a trainer. So I went there and I started training there and I became champion of León. I became state champion of Guanajuato. I became a regional champion and I became national bronze medalist in the National Olympic Tournament. All during that time, there was one student named Uriel de Jesus, who was a great artistic photographer and cinematographer and is now a professor teaching film. He was making a short documentary about Mexican culture and about boxing and about cockfighting, you know, chickens or that, and what it said about Mexican culture and about machismo and all that stuff. It won the Guanajuato International Film Festival and it also was shown at Cannes. So, man, all of that was happening at the same time. I was becoming champion. I was becoming regional champion, national champion, and we had cameras following us and it just felt like this is real. This is truly real. You know, and I've always, before I moved to LA and I moved to Mexico, what I was studying in Chicago, I went 1 year in community college in Chicago where I was studying film. So I said, man, there's no reason why I can't do everything that I want. You know, somehow this is finding me and this is giving me all the signs and just propelling me and giving me the energy to move forward. I was disappointed when I didn't win in the semifinal in the nationals. I ended up winning bronze. And man, I just had to make a decision. I was like, I can't turn pro in Mexico. I cannot fight for pesos when I can fight for dollars. I came back to Chicago and we were asking around. And a guy that my dad worked with, he said, yo, I know a guy who could turn him pro. I used to train at this gym. It was like on the north side by O'Hare, northwest side by all the Italians, by Melrose, was an area in Chicago. It was on Mannheim and Fullerton in Leiden. And there was an Italian guy named John Nocita and this other guy named Sammy D'Atusa. And that was like the very beginning of my professional career. I have to use the bed. The
unimaginable. Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
So my first trainer was John Nocita. He was a lawyer who grew up, you know, in the northwest side of Chicago with all the Italians. And the other guy, Sammy D'Atusa, also grew up in Melrose, the Italian neighborhood. And he was well connected with the old Italians in Chicago. And also he was a undercover detective, like taking down prostitution rings in Seattle. Wow. And it was funny because it all brought me back to Seattle because he was friends with a promoter out there in Tacoma near Seattle, Brian Hallquist, who had Brian Hallquist Promotions, and he had fights at the Emerald Queen Casino. So I signed with them, even though we were in Chicago, but it all kind of came back to Seattle where I was born. So I was fighting in Seattle a lot for my early career. And, you know, they didn't have them. I did not know how little I was fighting for at the time. I was so happy with whatever they were giving me. I was like, this is great. Yeah, you know, I get to come out. You know, it's kind of like near my hometown. I got a big crowd.
Yeah.
From the very first fight that I went out there, my second fight, I fought a guy 8-2. Mm-hmm. I'm 1-0. Mm-hmm. I'm fighting a guy 8-2.
Right.
This guy's a hometown favorite. Jerry McCleary, half Mexican, half Irish, has like 300 people there, you know. I come out there and boo. Yeah, yeah. Fuck this guy. I knew that this guy was short, man. I jabbing him, jabbing him, left hands being awkward, uppercuts. I split his nose in half and he was spraying blood everywhere.
Yeah.
And I thought I would go up to the promoter after Brian Hawkins and he'd be happy, and he didn't even look at me. He was so pissed. You know? I ruined his guy, his ticket seller, yeah. You know, my trainer, John, he said, oh, I have a murder case. He's a lawyer. I have a murder case in Alaska. This guy went all Rambo on these two guys, and these guys in this bar in Alaska tried to kill this veteran, mm-hmm. and the guy went Rambo and killed them.
Yeah.
So there was a big trial going on. He said, look, I'm going to be in Anchorage for a couple of months. Come with me. We're going to have the training camp.
Yeah.
So I go to Anchorage, and we start training. I start running 5 a.m., negative 35 degree weather, like Rocky style.
Yeah.
Amazing. Pandemic happens. Boom. I'm like, fight canceled. Everything's canceled. Meanwhile, he is negotiating to have me signed with a promoter, mm-hmm. you know. And they're having all these conversations without me, you know. Yeah. And it's very classic of Italian style to be like, hey, let us be in charge of the woo, woo, woo. And I'm not stupid, you know. I want transparency in all things, you know, just because that's the way that I prefer to have business. But ever since the beginning of time, they've told the Bucks, man, you just worry about training. Just worry about training. I'm worried about my pockets. I'm worried about my health. I'm worried about time invested. I'm worried about what kind of business opportunities might happen.
Yeah.
Why the hell should I just be focused on boxing? I did focus on boxing. And, you know, I beat more undefeated fighters than anybody, and it still didn't matter.
Yeah.
So I started to focus on the other things, you know.
Yeah.
They had meetings without me.
Yeah.
In the hometown of wherever the promoter was.
Right.
You know, and said that it had nothing to do with me.
Yeah, but
I was
bullshit.
Like, come on. No. I was like, oh, okay, you're talking about the fucking tea in China? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, yeah.
So I fired those guys. Uh-huh. I had to fire them, you know. It broke my heart to do it because I went 18-0 with those guys.
Yeah.
Pandemic starts, career's over, fired those guys. I'm still stuck in the contract with the promoter that was their buddy that had, you know, now I'm stuck with this guy who I have no relationship with. No, everything's fucking shut down. I'm like, my career's over.
Yeah.
All right, fly back from Alaska and I'm sitting at home. I'm like, well, what the fuck am I going to do now? I go on a dating app and I'm not going to say. I go on a dating app. I meet this girl.
Yeah.
And I just fall in love with this one girl, right? And for 3 weeks, we're hanging out in Chicago, you know, during the pandemic. And she says, oh, I got to go. You know, this is the pandemic. She's from Norway. I got to go. I'm like, okay, don't go. Stay here and let's get married. So I got married.
Wow. Congratulations.
We're separated now.
Yeah, but me, you know, okay. No, well, commiserations.
Yeah, so it was crazy, man. You know, and like part of all this journey was to a boiling point. And when it came to firing my trainers and my managers, you know, it was like I knew that my career wasn't going to the level that it should have. And it really wasn't their fault, but it was just I knew that I needed a different level. All the attention that I wasn't getting from the boxing world or just the validation, which I sought so hard to get because I thought I was doing enough to prove it, mm-hmm. you know, I started to go out and I started partying.
You know?
I started partying and, you know, the guys, my whole career, I'd been moving around and boxing and I was always in the gym. So I really didn't have any friends. Mm-hmm. All of my guys, you know, had been moved away. They're all in college doing all these different things. And I'm just in the fucking gym grinding it out, fucking winning professional fights all the time. And the people that were my friends were guys who stuck around in Chicago. And a lot of those guys, you know, sold drugs. Yeah, they did different things like that. And I was getting the love that I wasn't getting from the boxing world with these guys, you know. Yeah. So I started to get in trouble a little bit. And that kind of led me down like a bad path.
Yeah. And how long did that last?
The whole pandemic year came to like the
boiling
point.
It's a good time to do it.
The pandemic really came to the boiling point where I just fucking was digging myself into a hole, man. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I had to get out.
Yeah.
I knew that I was going to die in Chicago, man.
Right.
So at that time, you know, me and my ex-wife are like, you know, I'm getting to the point where I'm like, yo, we need to either grow or this is going to stop here. I said, "Are you coming? Are you coming with me?" So we had to move out of our place. And I just got a job, you know, at a car dealership. And I'm like, fuck, like, this is what I'm going to do now.
Yeah.
I'm at a car dealership and I get us an apartment and I tell my story to the property manager, John. And this guy lights up when I tell him about my boxing story. He's like, "You know what, kid? I'm going to hook you up." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And he's like, "My uncle knows Freddie Roach."
Wow.
I was like, "No way."
What?
I was like, "No way." I was like, "Get out of here." He's like, "Yeah, man, I'm going to hook you up."
That is insane.
"I'm going to hook you up with Freddie Roach." I'm like, "That's awesome, man."
Yeah, yeah.
So months go by and nothing happens. I call him again. Oh, he's like, "Hey, you ready? We're going to go." Yeah. Nothing happens. "Hey, yeah, you ready? We're going to go." Nothing happens again. Yeah. Pretty soon, I'm starting to get pissed off. You know, I'm like, "Man, just don't fucking call me, man. Right. Please." He calls me, says, "Gio, me and my wife just bought our tickets to Vegas. We're going to go see my Uncle Chuck. Are you coming?"
Yeah.
I pack up all my shit in my car, all of my shit, because I knew I was not coming back.
Yeah. How'd you know?
Huh?
How'd you know you weren't coming back?
I didn't give a shit, man.
Yeah.
I put all my...
You're ready just to be I'm here, I'm in, I'm turning up, and I'm let's go, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. I love that attitude.
So I pack up all my shit. I tell my ex at the time, I said, "You coming?" She says, "Yeah." We drive from Chicago to Vegas in my Mustang. We get to Vegas, and John introduces to his uncle Chuck Cameron, who had been a huge sales guy in the 80s in Vegas. You know,
right.
He big guy in Vegas during the 80s. And he had given Freddie Roach a job when Freddie Roach was a buster and he was fighting in the 80s in Vegas, you know. And he taught him how to be a salesman and all this stuff. And so we get there. This guy's fucking awesome. Chuck Cameron. He's got horn-rimmed glasses. He's like one of those guys from Casino. He's funny as hell.
Yeah.
Telling joke after joke. Fucking walking around like he owns every place, man. Fucking really cool, charismatic guy.
Yeah.
We have dinner at the Aria Hotel. And finally, at the end of the dinner, he's like, "You know what? I like this kid. You know, I'm going to call Freddie." So he picks up the phone and he calls Freddie. He says, "Hey, Freddie. Yeah, it's me. It's Chuck." He's like, "You know that kid that I was telling you about? You know, I'm going to send him to you tomorrow. He's coming tomorrow, so receive him well."
Yeah.
He hangs up the phone. He shakes my hand and he leaves and I'm...
Like,
man. I'm like, "Please, man, I need this. I got all my shit in my car." Drive to LA. I get to Wildcard and there's a line of people outside and photographers. I'm like, "What's going on?" And like, I see a car pull out and I was like, "Oh shit, I think that was Manny Pacquiao."
Wow.
So Manny Pacquiao was like, "Oh, that's awesome." You know, I walk in and I see Freddie and John's there. John was Chuck's nephew who organized the whole thing. And we get there and I'm like, "Oh my God, I'm like, it's fucking Freddie Roach. I'm ready for this."
Yeah.
He comes up, he's like, "Hey kid." I'm like, "How you doing, Mr. Roach?" He's like, thank you for taking this like meeting, you know. He's like, "Well, he's like, how many fights you got?" I was like, "I'm 18-0. You ever win any national tournaments?" I was like, "I got a bronze in Mexico." He's like,
Yeah.
He was like, we'll see. If you're good, you could stay." I was like, "Thank you, sir. That's all I need."
Yeah.
But I had been partying for like a year during the pandemic.
Right.
I'm out of shape.
Yeah.
Shit. But I had been training at home. But
Do you make you spar right away? Or you just, how do you, how's
so
that go?
I'm training 2 days later. I'm in the gym. And after training, Freddie comes up to me. He says, "Gio, Manny Pacquiao wants to meet you."
Yeah.
I was like, "What?" Manny Pacquiao is my hero, man. This is why I started boxing.
Right.
"Manny Pacquiao wants to meet you. Maybe if he likes you, you could spar with him." Because I was southpaw and I was the same height as Errol Spence and he was fighting Errol Spence. And he's, you know. So 5 minutes before he gets there, he's like, "Yo, Gio, Pacquiao just fired both of his sparring partners. He wants to go 4 rounds with you right now." I was like, "What the fuck just happened?" I swear to God, I started to get nervous. My knees started to shake. I looked at him and what was I going to say? No.
Yeah.
To Freddie Roach. "I'm not going to spar Manny Pacquiao." I said, "Fuck." He said, "You want to do it?" I said, "Yes, sir." I said, "All right, get ready." Holy shit. I'm fucking starting to warm up. I'm like, "Damn, I don't know what I'm going to do, man." Like shit, this is Manny Pacquiao. The Fox News Sports 1 cameras come in like, his entourage of like 20, 30 Filipinos come in.
Damn, some, what a moment.
Some skinny, some fat, some smiling, some laughing at me. Like, "Look at this fucking kid's about to get knocked out."
Yeah.
You know, the Black Eyed Peas are Apple D App and Jay Ray Soul. They love Manny. He's Filipino. They're Filipino.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So
yeah,
they're
yeah.
there. A couple, yeah. Carl Towns, a couple of big NBA players are there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fucking packed. His wife and his kids are there. You know,
yeah.
cameras yeah. going off. I'm like, what the fuck just happened? I'm warming up, and I see Manny warming up, and I'm copying everything that he's doing, you know, because I'm like, well, shit. And Pepe Riley is one of the trainers there. He's always had my back from the very beginning, always, you know, was close to me, and, you know, he doesn't know me at all. And he's just looking at me like, like, I don't know what you're going to do, man. He puts on my headgear. I'm in the ring. He's like, well, just be yourself, man. Do the best you can.
Yeah.
I'm like, and that was one of the few times I truly... pray to God, man. I was like, man, just let me be proud of my efforts today, you know? Just let me give a good account of myself, man.
Yeah.
And then Manny Pacquiao starts bouncing around in the corner opposite of me, and I'm like, this is a fucking movie, man. Yeah, what's going on? Yeah. Like, this is insane. Ding, the bell rings, and I could stay away. I'm staying away. I'm fighting okay. Like, I'm doing good.
Yeah.
He hits me a couple times. Oh, shit. I hit him a couple times.
I mean, I know he hits good, but did he get you good?
Yeah. Well, you know, I was able to stay away because I'm very awkward and slick, you know? And I did my best, and Manny Pacquiao hired me to be his sparring partner.
Man. Wow.
I had nowhere to stay either. I had nowhere to stay, and I was like, he said, hey, he wants to hire you to be a sparring partner. I'm like, fucking, I'm great. I was like, look, I have nowhere to stay. He's like, okay, hold on. He comes up, Manny's waiting in a Mercedes outside. He's like, tell Manny. He's like, Manny, I would love to help you, but I got nowhere to stay. He's like, he looks at me for a second. He's like, it's okay. You see that hotel right there? You're going to stay there.
Wow.
I was like, oh, shit. I was like, thanks a lot, champ, you know. And I got to stay for like 2 months in the hotel next to the gym, sparring Manny Pacquiao. He was paying me like grand a week. It was
fucking incredible. So that you're still 18-0 and you're sparring with Manny Pacquiao, uh-huh. Pacquiao, and you're staying at the hotel,
mm-hmm.
you're getting paid, and then...
And then that's over, and then Manny leaves and everyone goes, ooh, yeah. Now all the money's gone. I'm just back to being a normal guy. Yeah, I'm just normal. No one gives a shit. They're like, oh, yeah. Like, you thought that was going to last forever, kid?
No, sir.
Now I got to conquer the gym environment, you know?
Right.
Because there's people that have been there for years, man. Years. I get there 2 days in LA and I'm sparring Manny Pacquiao, you know? Yeah. I still didn't have a manager, still wasn't signed with a promoter, and it took a long time. It took like 6 or 7 months for me to get signed.
Yeah.
Eventually, I got with this guy, Steve Fader, who I'm no longer with. He was managing me for a while, like, really good guy, you know? And he got me signed with Top Rank,
okay. One
of the best. You know, oldest promotional companies. Bob Arum started Top Rank. Cool. The same guy who started promoting Ali.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, man, the first fight was insane. I didn't make weight.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I was fucking really embarrassed about that. It's like, it's my first fight with Freddie. I'm on Top Rank and I didn't make weight. I was like, God damn it, you dumb
How
man.
Much were you over?
But I was a lot over. I was like 2 pounds over. Damn. That's a lot.
Yeah.
And yeah, man, it was, but you know, everything happens for a reason because the main event or the co-main event, that fight was canceled because one of the guys didn't make weight.
Mm-hmm.
So I got bumped up to the main event. My Damn. Salary tripled, man.
What?
Now they asked me, he's like, my old manager, Steven, he's like, hey, do you want to take the fight? Like, you know, Bruce Rambler's right here. He's making me call you. Like, we don't have to take it. I'm just letting you know they're making me call you. Do you want to do it?
Yeah.
Well, give me a second. I look at the guy. I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. I watched the guy for 10 seconds and I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. I'm like, well, let me just ask Freddie. I told Freddie, I said, hey, Freddie, I want to take this fight. I said, I think I can beat him. Freddie's like, yeah, you just got to be real careful with this guy. Had I continued watching the video, this guy, Hiron, was a really, really good Mexican fighter. And had I finished watching the video, he had just knocked out that guy in that video, but I didn't finish watching it. Was a U.S. Olympian, Carlos Balderas. Damn. He had just knocked him out in his last fight. And I was just like, meh,
because
I didn't finish watching the video. Man, I accept the fight and I get in there and I teach that guy a boxing lesson. Man.
Yeah, wow.
Tripled the money.
That is incredible.
Fucking celebrated.
Awesome.
Me, Freddie, my parents are there. I didn't see my parents since I moved out of here, man. Yeah. gave my mom and my dad a hug. It was fucking awesome.
That's so good.
I guess from a professional point of view, like where you're at right now, is that, is it 21 and 0 or 23 and 0?
21 and 0.
21 and 0. And then like going forward, like is, what's coming up?
What's coming up is I'm fighting Isaac Pitbull Cruz. He's currently ranked number 5. Isaac Pitbull Cruz became a star in boxing because he gave Gervonta Davis the undefeated. You know, he was a lightweight champion. Mm-hmm. He's a champion at 140 pounds. He was one of Mayweather's proteges and one of the most popular guys in boxing. They just sold the 5th highest pay-per-view of all time against that Ryan Garcia fight, which he knocked out. And this guy became a star because he gave Gervonta Davis the best fight. And nobody wanted to fight him. Nobody wanted to fight him. They offered him Ryan Garcia, and he actually turned it down. They offered him another guy, Shakur, and he turned him down. And I guess he thought I was the easiest fight. Big fucking mistake that he accepted. But I've defeated more undefeated fighters than any boxing prospect in history. Mm-hmm. Not Shakur, not Ryan Garcia, not anybody. Not anyone you can name has a better record than me in 20 fights except for Ali and Lomachenko.
Wow.
And that's about it, man.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279. Or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy. And we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary. Indulges your senses and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Leesa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit leesa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Beyond
imaginable. The last time we talked, we heard about your history, you know, from strength to strength, fight to fight, win to win. It felt like it was just moving forward at a fast pace, and you were building up to the biggest fight of your life, which was in front of 20,000 people, never mind the PPV, which however many million people watched that. And the fight came down to a split decision at the end. What I want to hear about is, how has that affected you? What is your position now? Like, what's going on with you after having that split decision and that being the first time that you technically didn't have a knockout or a win or whatever?
Well, yeah, man, I mean, it was really challenging my entire professional career. I haven't taken a loss. Pitbull, you know, he was a good fighter, but you know, I think this is another one of those cases where, you know, the B-side fighter is the odds are stacked against him in terms of media, in terms of promotion, because there's a lot of money involved, and the person who they want to win, everything will be in their favor. And that is always the case. That knowing that, I knew that going in, and I knew that I had to dominate him in order to win that fight. I boxed very well. I was in shape. I did one of the best weight cuts that I ever did. I felt physically really strong, mentally, spiritually. I think I was running laps around Pitbull in terms of speaking, in terms of my impact that I had on boxing writers and the public there. They're just like, who the hell is this guy? Like, I was relatively unknown. And it was just so funny because I was like this splinter in the career of this guy, Pitbull Cruz. You know, he's had a couple losses. His last fight was a very close decision against Gervonta Davis, one of the most feared guys. But I would say that he himself is one of the most feared guys. Nobody really wants to fight him. His name is Pitbull. You know, he fights like a wild dog. He throws haymakers and he tries to kill you. I knew that I could outbox him, so I went in there fully confident because I know me growing up, everything that I've been through, my perspective in boxing, the way that I fight, I knew that it was too complicated for him. I go out there, first four rounds, I start, boxing beautiful. It's almost boring. You know, the crowd is kind of quiet because he's swinging that air. I started to realize that I don't know if this is the right strategy long term, because I may be using my legs a little bit too much. My corner also had been telling me, hey, listen, you want to win this fight, you got to go get him, go get him. Now this guy has been referred to as like the modern day little Mike Tyson, you know, so I was never, ever, ever intimidated by him in any of the sense. Like, you could see it from the press conferences, everything that I said was fully confident. And I was just, my presence was there to win, you know, there looking at him like he was just another, egotistic, kind of bully type of a fighter who thinks he's going to scare somebody. I'm like, come on, man, that's hilarious. He's 5'4", man. Like, that's like my little nephew trying to intimidate me. So all these things in consideration, I was fully confident going into the fight. First four rounds, boom. But even so, I still had never been to such a big stage. This was probably the biggest pay-per-view since Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather. As far as a welterweight fight, I mean, it was two undefeated fighters, Terrence Bud Crawford versus Errol Spence Jr., you know, for a welterweight unification. This was a giant, giant fight, man. And I really felt they did everything to diminish my presence in the media. You know, people were flocking to me in the buildup of the fight because they're like, who the hell is this kid? Well, you know what? This kid's got something, man. Like, we can feel it. You know, I even got, pretty cool, one of my favorite guys, Waka Flocka, to come out and walk me out into the ring, which they didn't even really show on TV that well. Why? Because, of course, they wanted Pitbull to win because they were trying to set up the next Gervonta fight. All these things, accumulation really would bother most people, but I'm stubborn as hell, man. I am a plan destroyer, and I went there and I outboxed Ezra four rounds easy. But all this in my mind, all these different scattered ideas and directions in which my energy was going to mentally, still had a sliver of doubt. What if he is a Mike Tyson? What if he does swat like that? And I knew that I had to hold my ground, but there's a lot of holes in the way that I was fighting, not because it wasn't working, it was working, but and the second half of me boxing so intelligently was to hit the guy hard enough to start wearing him down. Now, I don't know if I was smart or if it was fear that was keeping me from trading with him. But part of my stubbornness, it's almost like when you get into an argument where you're not really making sense, but you continue to argue that way. Some kind of gene or some kind of mode in your body tells you, keep doing this. So I stood there in the middle of the ring with my hands down and traded with one of the hardest punchers, because I knew that if I was to save my legs, I couldn't keep moving the same way the entire fight. And I took some of the cleanest, most vicious hooks to the jaw that he probably could have landed. And to my surprise, the boxing god smiled upon me and gave me something that, many had many had suspected and I always knew, but I never really put it to the full test, is that I have the boxing steel chin of old boxing lore, that of Jake LaMotta, that of Muhammad Ali. I can take any punch. But, you know, it took getting to that level, to that nervousness, to that hesitation to get hit with something like that in order for me to really understand how strong I really am, what inner strength I really have. And, you know, there's nobody in the lightweight division that could put me on the canvas. And if Gervonta, you know, couldn't put him down, I ended up knocking him down in the 11th round. I think it was the, which round was it? But one of the middle rounds, he repeatedly tried to headbutt me out of frustration. I mean, he was swinging at air, so many things, you know, and I would come in and I would clinch and, you know, make him so uncomfortable. Very similar to like what Mayweather does to a lot of people. Yeah, he tried headbutting me. And in that round, they took away a point from him. And like after the fifth time of him trying to do that throughout the fight, and they scored that round even, which never happens. And I think everyone can agree that I was never hurt at any point throughout the fight. So it really doesn't make sense how they could have scored that even round. That round was mine. In the 11th round, I also knocked him down, which wasn't counted. It was counted as a slip. Both of those things counted together. I think I would have won the fight. So I continued to fight really, really hard, and I ended up withstanding all of that, realizing my inner strength and saying, hey, I need to push this guy back. This guy can't get me out of here. I'm going nowhere. This is your fight, man. Go take it. In the later rounds, 11, 12, I won and I had him backing up, and he was the one who wanted the fight to be over. He was not having a good time in there and he was on his way out. If this was in the days of 15 round fights, Pitbull would have been in trouble. But, you know, that's not the case. And it was really tough to take that first loss. I felt that I had done enough to edge it out, but I knew that the boxing business wasn't going to allow me to do it if it was such a close fight. And I did fail to dominate him. Leading up to the fight, there were so many things that I was trying to do, being pulled one way and another, you know, because this is my shot. I got here with my gut, and I tried to do everything at once. You know, I tried to be my own businessman, tried to get sponsorships here, tried to, you know, network and make different contacts for different things in entertainment that could potentially push me higher in the public eye, all these different things, you know. And a lot of people told me, hey, like, you know, you really should focus on the fight and you're not trying to do all these things. But I'm a very stubborn guy, you know. Like, I'm a very stubborn guy. I'm a fighter. We go with our gut. My gut has led me to the success. So, you know, I have to learn for myself. I had to make the mistakes of, you know, dispersing energy a little bit too thin and all these things. But I don't regret it. I do not regret it, because now I know what I'm capable of and I know where I should be focused my energy. And
where is that? Where is your energy getting focused on?
My energy is being focused purely on boxing technique, you know. I know we talked about, you know, we had talked before about like my interest in business and boxing and mainly like contractual knowledge about boxing. I understand boxing, but I know nothing about business. And boxing is my business, and making smart boxing decisions will be beneficial in business to me, but I know nothing about business. And that's such an important thing to know, even as a businessman, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to ever become that person and you, like a Sugar Ray Robinson or like a Floyd Mayweather, you have to understand at first that you know nothing about that. Just like we have to understand that we know nothing about being at the highest stage of boxing. But that's what makes us fighters so brave, is that even though we don't know, we venture into the unknown to push ourselves to see what we're truly made of, you know?
Yeah. So on the boxing side of it, how have you taken that fight into consideration, even in training and, you know, as a fighter, you know, like in your own like mind, mm-hmm. what has this done to you in order for you to become a better boxer?
With my style of fighting and with taking on the machine of boxing, I realized that my style is not going to win me close decisions, especially when big money and big interest are on that side.
And why is that?
Just because it's not decisive enough in the public's eye. So if anything is questionable as far as the decision, a split decision, you know, points, knockdowns aren't counted or rounds are scored, you know, wrongly, like they're going to lean towards the other guy.
Yeah.
But if I knock these guys out, then there's no fucking question. Yeah, yeah, and that's always been the obvious answer. But for me, boxing has always been about, you know, being clever, man, pissing the guy off. I want to get a bull to come at me as hard as he can. And I want to look at him as I pop him in the face with the jab, as I turn him and he's like, what the fuck? He can't hit me. And he swings and he misses and he hits air and I'm dancing and I'm moving good and I'm feeling confident and I'm looking good, you know? Like, that is what I love about boxing. The craft of it, the artistry, you know, being clever, having rhythm and feeling good in the ring is something so beautiful. It's a little bit more finesse than the slugger, you know. A good boxer will always beat a brawler. You know, a guy who is a savage is not thinking, you know. A more technical boxer. I mean, that's why when Ali started to box the way that he did, you know, modeled after Sugar Ray Robinson, he started to put a dance on everybody because nobody could understand what he was doing because he was fighting with sticking and moving, you know. A lot of great movers fought the same way, you know, even back in the day, like Willie Pep, you know, Sugar Ray Robinson, that's who he modeled his style after. But it was completely taboo to lean back or have your hands down, you know.
So to not get a split decision next time,
I must knock people out. It was me finally coming to terms with that and me learning to start over, man. To start over in boxing as because I need to develop the power, the leverage, the torque, and admitting this, man, and looking at all the things that I did wrong, man. I feel like every time that I truly, you know, stop making excuses and humble myself and do some true self-reflection and see what I did wrong, think about everything that I did right and learn to evolve as a fighter. And you really only truly do that until you sit with yourself, look at those mistakes, and don't just brush it off. Feel the regret. You know, after the fight, I took some time to grieve my beautiful O that was there, man. You know, I ate and ate for like 2-3 weeks, put on a bunch of fucking weight, you know, drank some beers, went out, had fun, went, visited my family, came back. But everything tasted a little bit less sweet.
Yeah.
Everything has been a little bit drier, and I found myself trying to, you know, I don't know, feel something good. But what was missing here, and I think that, like, you know, the highest self is like the full capacity of who you are, and it's existing within you. And I think that that part of me was communicating with me, trying to pull my attention to the root of the cause, man, because nothing is fucking fixing it. Nothing is making me feel better. I was going, you know, nice restaurants, 5-star restaurants. The caviar didn't taste good, man. Yeah. It's your body. It's everything about you telling you, hey, there's something wrong. First, you must fix this. And the first thing is admitting everything that you did. You know, the shortcomings. You know, maybe one of those days I got up a little bit later for training. Maybe I didn't get enough sleep the way that I needed to. All these things that we just kind of brush over and make excuses that, oh, I had to do this, I had to do that. And those are the reasons why I did that. It's like, who fucking cares, man? Like, you know that was bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
well, you know, it's interesting because I've been thinking about this concept recently, which is about not attributing any value to the words good or bad or win or loss. Because if you attribute value to something like it's a win or it's a loss, you're basically reducing it down to what is probably just a concept that everyone can understand. But in the grand scheme of things, in the universal scheme of things, everything is just a stepping stone to the next thing. So I don't know if you can really say that something's good or bad, because in 10 years, you know, you might look back at the thing you thought was good and say that that was bad. And you might look back at this fight in 10 years and say, if I had won that fight on that split decision, I might not have got to where I am now. And I find that interesting because your attitude after this fight to me was that you're a winner, you know? And like, so I'm like, and it took me a second to come to terms with the idea of like, well, if somebody lost a fight, but they still think that they're a winner, what does that mean? And that's why I've been really interested about talking to you after it, because I think that that the next level of understanding who we really are as people and what we're really good at, and like what our calling is, what our purpose is, what we believe in, like the thing that we know about ourselves, it is what we are best at, that there's never going to be a loss there, because every single loss is just leading you to the next version of yourself, you know? And so, and as that goes on, I think there's been plenty of great boxers in the past that have had plenty of losses, you know, and gone on to be like, you know, superstars, you know?
Well, take Canelo Alvarez. I mean, he, you know, fought a lot of older fighters. He fought a lot of really nobodies in Mexico for a very long time before he started fighting, you know, the premium level guys, but kind of veterans. Mm-hmm. Maybe had 1, 2, 3 losses, but he had enough confidence in the way that he was built up and brought up, and also the skill, really, to put all these guys on their ass. He climbed to the top, and at 23 years old, fought Floyd Mayweather. You know what I mean? And he got the ass schooling of his lifetime, man. He looked like he was an amateur boxer, man. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like, yeah. I lost a split decision against one of the most feared punchers mm-hmm. in boxing. So, you know, that was his first loss. He got schooled in his first loss.
Yeah, yeah.
I took on the machine. I believe I won. I didn't get the decision that I wanted. Right. But not only that, but I was able to knock down and push back and make him want to leave the ring before I did.
Yeah,
to one of the hardest punches in boxing. Mm-hmm. Not using the new style that I wanted to talk about now yeah. that I have. I was inspired now to develop the style because I know that I have to win differently from now on.
So this new style, that is this something that was, you would say, is birthed out of this, the learning experience from this fight?
Or an accumulated process of my whole understanding of boxing. And that's why I'm one of the best boxers in the world. And I believe that I can be the best in the world. And see, part of me believing, part of me coming up and achieving new levels and believing more and more in myself has made me realize that listen, you have tried every variable outcome of all these different body positions, never truly sticking to one, always improvising, always standing at odd angles because you're trying to figure out what you don't have. And what I didn't have was the leverage. Because of my appreciation for the different style of moving and head movement, and you know.
Wait, hang on a second. So you're saying the way that you stood was, you know, it was basically you trying to figure out what you don't have?
Exactly. So me standing in all these awkward positions is me trying to figure out how can I leverage, like, from this leg or that leg or with mm-hmm. this arm or...
So you knew, you knew there was something.
So more. Where everyone is fighting in a style, I'm fighting on a nothing.
So
I'm
that's why your style's awkward.
Yeah, because yeah. they don't know what the fuck I'm doing because I'm trying to figure everything out. I what I like at a certain time, like, you know, maybe like for a while I like jabbing and hooking, so I do that for a while, and I'm in this position for a while, and I, you know, transition in between different positions of that sort. But that'll be my inspiration for a while. Mm-hmm. I'll be like, you know what, fuck it, let me try it this way. And then I'll start doing it this way and I'll switch back and forth between that, but still never sticking to one thing solidly.
And that goes back to you saying, that goes back to you talking about being pushed and pulled on the way up with business ideas and all the other stuff that goes on the peripheral. You know, it's nearly back down to the basics.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, well, I can do all this stuff, but it's like, what's the one thing I'm missing? And let me go find
find the power only. Yeah, yeah. Let me go find the power only.
So, like, that's cool. So are you saying you figured that out?
I have figured it out, my friend. It happened in a moment. You know, I had been a little bit down for a little bit about the loss and about, you know, what's next and, you know, what comes with that. You know, a lot of people respect. A lot of people in Mexico think I won the fight. All on the scorecards and ESPN knockout, ESPN Mexico, they had me winning the fight. Arriba León, Guanajuato. Arriba Chicago. But yeah, man, they had me winning the fight, man. And they had me winning the fight all over Europe and like Sky Sports and all the shit, all the telecasts. Everyone thought I won.
I had no idea.
But because we don't really know how much media affects us, you know, the accounts, Instagram accounts, their accounts, like the way that they're using the cameras in the fight. Mm-hmm. Like it's fucking right. Night and day, depending where you are. And the commentators as well, you know, everything of that sort. But But no, man, I really just, you know, I know that I have the strength. I know it. I mean, he couldn't hit me. That means I'm stronger than him. I backed him up. That means I'm stronger than him. And I did it with a distance, a mid-distance technique of jabs and flicking punches and fast combos and trying to move around. And but when I decided to finally go forward with that style, you know, it worked. I was still stronger than him. So it was all mental the entire time, man. This guy's not fucking Mike Tyson, man. We're all human, man. And guess what? I don't give a fuck who you are, who you beat. If I land a hook the right way, it's going to knock you out, man.
But like, what's the new thing that you've learned?
Well, I don't even know if I really want to give it away because...
Well, okay, but like talk about it artistically.
I guess what it means is like I use... For people who don't understand my style, let's talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I don't want you to give away the power.
Yeah,
to, you know what I mean? But that, what I'm saying is like you've learned...
I've learned leverage. I've learned true leverage.
Have you learned the thing that you were missing?
I learned the thing that I was missing, man.
And that's the thing, right?
And now
it's so beautiful.
It's such a beautiful thing because now, like, I really truly feel I can decide to be like Pitbull, throw everything that I have for 3-4 rounds and just wear you down, man. I'm going to wear you down. I'm going to hurt you. You're going to wish that you're not there. And right when your legs get tired enough and you start to think, oh, no, blah, 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 I'm going to fight from a mid-distance with speed with my other style, the style that I've developed so good. But by the time that your feet are in quicksand, you're going to be too slow, and I'm going to torture you for the rest of the fight until you decide to quit get you out of there.
Is this new style going to be a combo of the old awkward style and something else, or is it a whole new thing?
It's going to be in spurts. When I'm on the outside, I will use my jab. I will use my awkward angles. But for the most part, I'm going on the attack, man. These guys have pissed me off, you know. And this is another part about the ego of the boxers. You know, you reach a certain level and you think, I'm this. I have nothing to prove. Well, guess what? I am not champion of the world yet. And although I do believe I am a champion, a hard champion in spirit, and can go toe-to-toe with anybody, all that jazz, blah, 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 I still got to fucking prove myself, man.
I think that's what matters, is the fact that you believe that. The fact that, you know, that anyone exactly. believes that. And so, like, because if you don't believe that, your whole energy will not emanate that, and ultimately it'll end up not happening.
Yeah, man, it's so funny that you say that about, like, you know, about it is because I believe that. And like, let me just use this thought experiment for a second. Let's say it fucking wasn't true and I'm just making up some delusion.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter.
Right.
Even if I believe that, that's the only thing that's going to allow it for me to make it possible to start training like that.
Yeah, because that belief is the vehicle to success.
But if you think about like human evolution, like something about our psychology and something about our genes and like the intelligent human brain and the intelligent human body and the intelligent unconscious is designed to reward us with endorphins when something is going to lead us to survival.
Mm-hmm.
And what's funny about that is like, I could choose to die right now. I could choose to quit right now boxing and say, I can't do it.
Yeah.
But
I have a feeling you're not going to do
that. For some reason, the physiology, the chemistry in my body, the brain, the evolution of man is telling me, fuck, this is making me feel like shit. But the minute I start to imagine what I'm talking about.
Yeah, right.
The minute that I start to say, no, wait, hold on. There's this way. Holy shit, do I get a well of energy?
But in order for you to get to that point, you already had to think that way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So then if you're the kind of person that does think that way, every kind of situation you're in, whether it's a win or a loss, will get you to the next level, because what you're going to do is use the thing that happened, whatever it was, to sharpen your craft, to tighten your gaze, to like get that new perspective that you hadn't had before because you hadn't been in that position. And if you think that way and you look at life that way and you go at it life that way, you're only going to get better and better and better. Dude, you know?
I have no other option, man. Like I can choose... You know, I can choose to be miserable, man. I really can't. I felt miserable in some points.
What was it?
I got so fucking tired of it. It's like that's when the hopeless dreamer starts to imagine bullshit that isn't real.
Yeah.
Like me starting at 16, looking the way that I look, being the small skinny kid with no power. Everyone was like, "Ha."
There's no fucking way. There is no way, you know, that I'm going to reach with the highest pay-per-view of all time, fighting one of the most feared punchers of all time,
yeah,
knocking him down, you know, backing him up at the end of the fight and losing by a point. I mean, it sounds absurd, and it is absurd, but it fucking tickles my fancy, man.
Yeah,
like, but for some reason, like, it gives me that well of energy. It's so inexplicable, but, like, that is how we evolve, man. It literally is. Like, we are designed to do this.
So, yeah, just to be here is a gift. And then to have something that you have dedicated yourself to, that you believe in so strongly, that there's just going to be a journey. There's just going to be a life. And that life can be very exciting because the peaks and the troughs are where it's at. In the in-between, that's where I think people really learn and figure things out. And that's what that's kind of the vibe that I get from what you're saying. And it's been helpful for me because I sometimes look at things a little more black and white, you know, where it's like, well, this didn't happen the way I want it to happen, so it didn't happen, you know? And then instead of looking at it the way that I think you look at it, is like, but this happened as part of my trajectory. Like, that's inspiring.
I truly feel that it keeps you exactly where you need to be. Like, I mean, how the fuck is it even possible that I got this well of energy that gave me the strength to take punches that would have knocked anybody out on the planet? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think about that all the time. I think about Ali. It was his belief in God, man. Like, it was belief in himself.
Yeah, yeah.
It was him just believing that. Like, you know, anybody else, you know, couldn't fight with a broken jaw, but he says, nah, man. He believes in so much, man. And I think about like the modern studies of like neurology and like Dr. Joe Dispenza and like all the great inventors. It's like you believing or imagining things that are unrealistic, like, will literally change your body chemically. You know, no matter how many, the more you think about it, the more it's rehearsed mentally, the more that you feel that chemically in your body.
Yeah, but it's like you make the impossible possible by doing that.
It's ridiculous, but for me, it came from desperation, man. It comes from like, hey, man, like,
this has to happen.
This is the only thing that is worth living for, like. You know, we all have a purpose, man, and it's up to everyone to find their purpose. This is just the beginning, man. This is just the beginning. I'm excited, man. I feel like I'm starting over in boxing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, everything that happened, man, is all for the deconstruction of my fucking ego, man. And, like, the more that you purify that, your intention, the more that it's not about anything else except for the highest ideal of the craft, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's about that, man. It's about loving it and loving the feeling of doing something great, man. The thing about boxing that I loved first and foremost was the illusion or the dream or the fantasy that I could be great. That's what brought me to boxing. I loved the way that Ali looked. I loved the way that Manny Pacquiao looked when he knocked guys out and won championships. And the people are cheering.
But it's interesting.
Like, he's done something great. He's done something great. And now what I'm worried about is media being respected, mm-hmm. being respected by everybody else in boxing. I'm worried about money. I want everything to be right. I'm worried about business relationships. Fuck that, mm-hmm. man. What it was all about in the beginning was glory for showing who I am in the ring.
Well, you said it right off the bat. You said it was an illusion.
Illusion.
It wasn't real. Like, you know what I mean? That's the media. That's what everything you're talking about. What's real in boxing has got to be what happens in the ring.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that's real, right?
What was real was me getting hit with that punch and shaking it off like he was my little cousin.
Yeah, yeah.
My little nephew. What? Did he just fucking do that? Everyone tells me all the time, well, the people who've seen the fight, man, you box so good, man, you gotta keep your hands up. Man, those punches that you took, I mean, he knocked out a lot of guys.
I watched that punch.
He knocked out Gamboa. He knocked out a bunch of guys that crumbled like paper. No, it didn't even faze me, not for a second.
I think I saw you smiling while he did it.
It took two or three rounds of that that nervousness, that hesitation, going through that boxing. And even when he landed those haymakers, the fight was so fucking close. Those rounds were so close. I mean, I was making it so difficult for him to do anything that he wanted to do. And I was kind of boxing him very well in all the rounds, but then there was moments where he would capitalize, and I actually made it so boring the whole round that when he did something, it was so much better than it was.
Yeah, we could talk all night about the actual fight, but what's really, really kind of interesting to me, you're talking about your ego being deconstructed.
Exactly. So every higher level that I achieve, I say, now, oh shit, now I'm fucking up here, son. I did everything that I had to do to fucking get here. Now I'm here in full confidence in front of everybody. Ah! And then I'm like, oh wait, no, you fucking idiot. That's not it.
Yeah.
Because once you have that, it's a false sense of security.
Mm.
You gotta keep fucking doing the thing that got you here, man. And like everybody, a lot of people have tried to tell me that. My father told me all the time, he says, Gia, look. And you've said it to me before too, and our friendship outside. Mm-hmm. He's like, you're a boxer, man. You are talented. You're going to go on to do anything that you want to fucking do in this life because you have the work ethic. You're likable. You're this, you're that. But what made you you is your boxing. On a deeper level, what it really was my determination and my feeling for wanting to be great. And the only thing that I know how to do greatly is work hard, man. Work hard and fucking tough it out with the best fighters in the world. Prove myself in the eyes of one of the greatest trainers of all time, Freddie Roach. That is what gives me the confidence to walk around and truly believe in myself and express that and share that energy with others. And, you know, try to let that rub off a little bit. Just feel the boxer in his prime. Feel the young man. The ego is a sword and a shield, man.
Yeah.
You know, it's a sword and a shield. But the sword is sharp and it can cut you.
Mm.
And the shield can block shit, but it can be so heavy that it stops you from doing the things that you want.
Mm. That's interesting. That's cool. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it really is.
So that's just, what you're saying there is it's
your tool, man. It's
but
your
tool. But you're trying to have to use your ego and watch it so that you can block when you need to block and you can strike when you need to strike, but you can't let one or the other
You can't let it outweigh. You know, we have our protectiveness and we have the things that makes us go get it. And look, I couldn't, without feeding my ego, there's no fucking way I could.
That's powerful information.
Yeah.
To be able to say, like, I understand my ego when it's helping me, and I understand my ego when it's defending me, but I'm not going to become so defensive that I can't attack. And I'm not going to go so much on the attack that I can't defend myself.
It'll hurt yourself. The unimaginable.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful fingersticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch, so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take control of your diabetes with the number one recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.